Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable on the final day of March when we have a state budget in place, I'm told. I haven't read the whole thing yet. In that vein, good morning. My name is Sandra Barrett, and on behalf of University College of Syracuse University, it is my pleasure to welcome you here today to Thursday Morning Roundtable. Looking ahead to April, you'll be seeing the April schedule on the website or in your mailboxes soon. We'll be ending April also with a bit of a budget talk with Mayor Miner of the City of Syracuse. She'll be coming out with the city's budget next week, I believe, and so that'll give you a few weeks to digest it, and she'll be here at the end of April to talk about the budget. Next week, we will be hosting Rhonda O'Connor. She's the new director of community engagement director at Visions for Change, which is a part of Housing Visions. I know many of you have been involved with that program. It's a great project, and I know that everybody who is interested in the community will be interested in that talk. On April 14th, we have the rescheduled talk on Vera House. Even though the campaign has already started, we'll be talking with the folks there about the campaign to end domestic violence. And Fred Fisk, who's a member of the committee, has promised to wear his high heels again. So you won't want to miss that one. And then the following week, we are very pleased to have secured Dr. Reuben Cowart, who is the head of the Syracuse Community Health Center. And, of course, there are all kinds of issues there with health care, and we'll learn a little bit more about what they've been doing in the community. So a full month. Anyway, right now it is my pleasure to have Dero Branch, who is a member of the board of Centro, or the Central New York Regional Transportation Authority, I should say, introduce today's speaker. Thank you, Dero.
Thank you, Sandy. Good morning, everyone. Again, my name is Dero Branch. I'm a director at Empower Federal Credit Union, as well as a member, proud member of the Central Board. So I'd like to take a couple minutes just to introduce Frank. Before I do that, I'd like to introduce the management team, senior management team at Centro. John Reddick, who's the Senior VP Corporate Ops, if you could stand or wave your hand. Good. Steve Scher, who's the CFO. And Steve Cagle, Director of Marketing and Communication, who is here. And we have Rick Lee, the Vice President of Administration. Also, any other dignitaries in the House as well, welcome. So what I'd like to do is start with the Transportation Authority. It was created in 1970. The mission of the Central New York Regional Transportation Authority is to be responsive to the transportation needs of the Central New York community by providing services which are safe, convenient, reliable, and environmentally responsible with a goal of maximizing the taxpayers' return on investment. That's the mission statement of Centro. So a little bit about Frank. Frank is a graduate of Syracuse University and has completed professional training programs in public transportation at the Wharton School, the University of Pennsylvania, and Northeastern University. Frank was formerly employed by Syracuse University and became employed at Centro in 1977, just a couple years ago. Frank climbed the corporate ladder and has been CEO for over 7 years. He has served as 2 terms as president of the New York Public Transportation Association, and has been active in the American Public Transportation Association, which is a national organization representing transit providers throughout North America. Frank resides in Camillus with his wife, Kathy, and has 3 adult sons. The theme this morning, as you can see from the PowerPoint presentation, will be moving Central forward in challenging times. So, ladies and gentlemen, the man that keeps the city rolling, Frank Kubliski.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Dero. We certainly try to keep it rolling, although with 178 inches of snow this year, we've had our challenges, but we get through. A little bit of background first. Who are we and what do we do? I think everybody knows our white buses with the blue and green stripes that ply the roads and streets of central New York, but a little bit of background. As Dero indicated, we're a public authority created by the state of New York. It was actually created in 1970 for the purpose of sustaining, maintaining, and improving transportation throughout a 7-county region in central New York. Similar authorities were created in the Albany Capital District area, the Rochester area, and the Buffalo-Niagara Frontier area. And the genesis of that was that public transportation was failing as a private enterprise. You simply could not sustain public transit as a private business and charge a fare that anyone could either afford or who would want to pay and be able to pay for the operating costs, much less the cost of the vehicles and the infrastructure. So the Regional Transportation Authority, following its creation by the state legislature, created Centro in Syracuse and Onondaga County in 1972. They took over the assets of the bankrupt and failed Syracuse Transit Corporation, and since that time have absorbed public line haul scheduled services from other carriers locally and in the region, including Syracuse and Eastern Coach Lines, which used to ride out to Manlius out by the amusement park, that route, Syracuse and Oswego Motor Lines, and the Onondaga Coach Corporation to the west. In 1974, Centro of Cayuga was founded in Auburn and Cayuga County, picking up where the bankrupt Auburn Transit Corporation left off. And Centro of Oswego was similarly formed, and although public transit had been absent in Oswego for a number of years, the activity level generated by the SUNY campus in and with and around the college and city area definitely was supportive and ripe for the reintroduction of public transit. At the creation of the authority in 1970, the political leaders envisioned that the principal entities to be saved were bankrupt transit operations in Syracuse and in Utica. And although seven member counties were eligible to become members, I should say, the key points of interest in 1970 were the transit operations in Syracuse and in Utica. Interestingly enough, the Utica folks elected to go a different route and form a local authority. There were issues and challenges involved with that, including dedicated funding streams or the lack thereof, that caused that to be not only a hybrid or most unusual operation through several decades of service, but also ultimately where the tank just ran dry and the political leaders 6.5 years ago came to us at Centro and said, "We think it's time that we became a member county of the authority. What can you do for us?" So in the space of about 65 days or so, we put together a consultant grade study that showed how we might absorb and fully integrate and bring up to par the operations of not only the Utica Transit Authority, but a similar but smaller operation within the city of Rome. So tomorrow we celebrate our 6th anniversary of being in Oneida County, and if any of you are from Oneida County or travel through there and see the transformation that has taken place, we certainly are proud of it, and I think it's made a tremendously positive impact on that community. We created long before the Americans with Disabilities Act, and in the absence of grant monies, but with our own locally generated monies, Colobus in 1974, which was really a breakthrough operation to cater to the special transportation needs of the elderly and persons with disabilities. Being entrepreneurial sorts and not wanting to rely exclusively on public revenues and tax money, which we'll get into in a minute, We've undertaken a number of operations trying to improve our bottom line for supporting public transit, which loses money. And one of those creations since 1978 has been Central Parking. Some of you may know, many of you may not, that we operate all the parking garages and surface lots for SUNY Upstate Medical University. And that and several other parking operations or park and ride operations that we operate generate a couple $100,000 of positive cash flow each year to Centro, so that may pay for two or three buses to keep running out on the street 5 days a week. And lastly, but certainly not least, and very important to the community whether you ever ride a bus or not, is we built and operate and maintain and own the William Walsh Regional Transportation Center out near Carousel Center and the ballpark. It was a dream and a discussion point and it had so many facets and directions in this community for years and years and years about how do we solve the problem of having what was really a marginal, and that's probably a polite term, bus station for Greyhound, and similarly what the railroad had done to, for want of a better word, pillage the passenger rail operation and had left us with a shabby terminal way out in East Syracuse. So we were able to pull together money from many sources, federal, state, and put together the Walsh Transportation Center, which is now a hub for intermodal transfer for passengers among intercity bus, local bus, Amtrak, and a convenient taxi hop up to the airport. We now generate 40,000 central bus trips a year in and out of that center just for people going to take the train or the bus out of town. So what do? We operate urban and suburban services, urban services in the cities of Syracuse, Utica, Rome, Fulton, Oswego, and Auburn, suburban services that feed those communities from places like Whitesboro or DeWitt or Camillus or Senate. We operate intercity services, much of which we inherited from private carriers who gave up the ghost in that regard, for folks to ride from Auburn into Syracuse or Fulton and Phoenix and Oswego into Syracuse. We operate some interesting rural services, whether it's a commuter service to Tully and Lafayette or a rural service that actually is bursting at the seams in Oswego County between Oswego, Mexico, and Fulton, which serves BOCES centers and social service infrastructure in the village of Mexico. I'm sure most of you know, even if you don't ride Centro to work, you know what we do for special events. We've been the operator of transit services for the Carrier Dome since it opened in September of 1980. I proudly say successful from the get-go. We operate an extensive network of services for the state fair, both from the upper parking lots and cash fair park and ride lots throughout a three-county system that feeds into that. We operate institutional services for colleges and universities, large and small, from one end of our service area to the other. We have in Syracuse and Onondaga County a fleet of 120 clean compressed natural gas buses. We have received federal recognition in the form of an award from the Federal Highway Administration some years back for being a pioneer in this clean fuel technology, along with Long Island Bus in Nassau County. A number of other properties, not only in the state but nationwide, tried the compressed natural gas route and gave up the ghost because there were technological challenges involved. But the persistence and the skill and the talent of the central staff really got us through all of the scuffle and the challenges and put us at the forefront of this. We have recently been awarded by the Transportation Security Administration their Gold Standard Award for security preparedness for public transit systems in the United States, one of probably a half a dozen systems from coast to coast to attain that. In, I believe, 2004, we received a United We Ride Award from Cabinet Secretary Norm Mineta for our robust and extremely well-refined paratransit services for persons with disabilities. And we're very proud to receive numerous other awards from police agencies and other community agencies for things such as spotting the bad guys with our cameras on the bus and leading investigators to catch people who are doing things they shouldn't be doing, or routine accident investigation. All of our buses have a half dozen cameras on them, not just inside the bus, but one that looks outside the windshield, and it sees a lot, and it's helped solve a lot of problems for law enforcement in the community. So how did we get here? I kind of touched on this already. The business model simply didn't support public transportation by private entities. It was a robust undertaking at the turn of the 20th century when there were streetcars, and then when there were first buses introduced in cities throughout the land. And in the 30s and 40s, you know, roads weren't the best. People didn't have, if they had a car, that's what they had, a car. So the demand was high and the cost of providing the service was reasonable. But over the course of years, the cost of fuel, labor, buying a bus, the infrastructure, all turned this into a failure in terms of private enterprise. So not only in New York State, but throughout the United States, North America, and globally, public transportation, the typical urban transit bus operation, has become a financial ward of local or other municipal governments. Fortunately for us and for our community and for others, the state government and the local governments here in central New York recognized that public transit is a necessity, and they rescued the private operations and created transit as we know it today. In some cases, it's a public authority of the state, like we are. In other cases, it may be a department of a local county, like in Binghamton and Broome County. Utica Transit Authority, for years, was a local authority. In some cases, it's a statewide agency, like New Jersey. But I think you get the picture. So how are we funded? We have capital funding to buy buses, facilities, hard goods, and we have operating needs as well. The federal government used to provide a blend of funding to authorities and agencies throughout the land for both operating and capital. In the early to mid-90s, they stepped away from the operating cost and said, you know what, we'll pay 80% of what it costs to buy a bus or build a facility, but you have to back it up by having the financial wherewithal to actually operate it. So that was a real growing pain for us and so many of our colleagues, where all of a sudden the federal operating assistance went away. That was about 1994, and at the same time, you know, we seem to have these series of perfect storms here in this business. The mortgage recording tax, which is another source of revenue in our four-county area, really went downhill, and at the same time, the state budget was not able to sustain any short-term immediate increase to help us out. So we went through a number of changes at Centro, as they did in Buffalo and Albany and Rochester, to make our operation fit the revenue streams. We get also operating assistance locally from the counties. The state mandates a match of certain state operating funds. Fortunately for the counties and the county taxpayers, that number has not increased in 15 years, which is great for the taxpayers, but highly challenging for the transit operators. Fares make up less than 25% of the cost of doing business. Again, that points up what the whole problem was 30, 40, and 50 years ago as transit declined. The fares couldn't sustain the operation. Similarly, we have, as I mentioned earlier, other contracts for institutional services. We sell advertising on our buses and shelters, and again, central parking, which brings in some positive revenue to support the bus operation. So specifically, how are we funded? I'm sorry that probably a little too small for you to see on the graph, but the big slug of money that comes to pay for the daily operation, the fuel, the tires, the driver's salaries, keeping the lights turned on, all comes from the state, and it comes not so much from dedicated revenues like a gasoline tax, but mostly from the general fund. And anybody who's been a student, casually or otherwise, of the state budget and state finance knows the state general fund is a train wreck. We were fortunate that this year, and we've endured now 3 years coming up to today of decreased state aid. And when you lose a measurable chunk of what is half of your revenue, you have a challenge. And we've combined things, we've shrunken the staff, we've taken all sorts of internal measures in this unprecedented 3-year period to try to tailor the output to still be successful and yet meet the level of the revenues. But between that and this slice of the pie right here is the mortgage recording tax. 0.25% of every mortgage that's taken out in the four counties, minus a 10% or $10,000 exemption on residential for the first 10,000 of the price, is funneled into Central, along with towns and municipalities. Houses, I don't know how many realtors are in the crowd, but houses aren't selling as well as they might have been, and we're down probably $2 million in that category and probably $2 to $3 million in this category. On a $60 million budget, or $58 to $60 million budget, you lose $5 or $6 million a year for 3 years. Sooner or later, something's got to give. Which is why, just last Friday, the Board of Members, with reluctance, approved certain service reductions and a fare increase. Our costs, what does it cost to operate the system? We're labor intensive. You've got a driver on every bus, and you've got people a lot of people that it takes to repair the buses. There are driver wages. Vehicle maintenance, that's almost half of what it costs to make things happen at Central. When I say fringe benefits, which is about a quarter of the slice of the pie, that's for everyone in the organization, health benefits, pension, statutory benefits through, you know, for Social Security and so forth, you'll see that management and administration, service and support is a relatively small amount, whether it's planners, HR, risk management and so forth. We're as lean as can be in that regard. We also, in this slice here, we buy transportation, particularly for our call bus program, where you have tremendous peaks and valleys. And while you have those in the scheduled line haul service, you know every Monday and every Thursday or whatever that you need X number of buses on Salina Street or in Auburn or whatever. But on call bus, you don't know from one day to the next who's going to want to travel when and where. So we call upon taxi and van operators to provide service to augment our regular service and help us out with those peaks, which occur every day, but they may be different, literally, day to day. The crux of what I'm talking to you about today really comes down to what we've termed the eternal dilemma in public transit. On the one hand, you're a public service, you're public necessity and convenience, and you're charged with meeting a public need. That's our mission. On the other hand, we are charged as stewards of public funds to run this like a business. So striking that balance is a challenge in good times, and it's a real challenge in the not so good times. So let's talk about what's going on now and in the future. Let's talk about the transfer hub in downtown Syracuse for a moment. Going back to literally the horse car days, and Dennis, I'm sure you can help us out in this regard with history, facts, and maps, and photos, and so forth. There used to be big crossings of trolley and horse car tracks in the intersections in and around Fayette and Salina Street. They were called Grand Unions because all these masses of trolleys and horse cars came together to transfer passengers in the heart of downtown. You know, why do you do it downtown? I guess is, I should sidestep and ask that question of myself. You cannot, 100 years ago, today, 100 years from now, you're not going to be able to have a bus, a trolley, a monorail or whatever that's going to take you right from where you want to go right to where you want to be. So just like airlines with hubs, you typically develop these radial hub and spoke networks, which prevail in transit systems throughout the land except in the busiest, most densely populated systems like Manhattan, where literally there's all sorts of crosstown traffic and people in large numbers going every which way. You come to the hub in the center of retail and commercial and business activity and community life. Some buses are through-routed. Some trolleys were through-routed to try to match up people from in large groups where they want to come from and where they want to go. There are through-routed buses now that, for example, go from the South Salina Nedro Corridor out to Carousel Center and the hotels on North Salina Street, or the north side, rather, out in Salina for employment purposes. Liverpool, Carousel, Syracuse University, another through corridor, East Genesee Street, West Genesee Street. But we can't have a bus that goes from everybody's house to everybody's point of business. So we're out of necessity, we have a hub. And it's in downtown Syracuse. There's one in Rome. There's one in Utica. There's one in Auburn. There's one in Oswego. What we have done over the years because a 40-foot bus takes up a lot of more space and creates more commotion than a little horse car back in the 1890s, is you all know, we swallow that intersection at Fayette and Salina Street. And, you know, no pun intended, we kind of suck the oxygen out of it, although we're clean fueled. Had to say that. We have looked for literally years and years and years, casually back into the late 80s, with serious purpose since the early to mid 90s, for a location that would be suitable to not only relieve that core intersection of all of the scuffle that we create, so it would create opportunities for more development in our urban heart, but we needed something that was still in the central business district so that we would not inconvenience the travelers that are going by bus through to, in and out of, and from downtown locations. We needed a piece of property where we could get the whole operation off the street, which is hard to come by. We wanted to make it safe, convenient, climate controlled for our customers so that the bus riding experience was a better one, and at the same time not create traffic issues at a new location, not smother somebody's small business. And finally, in recent years, we came upon a site. It's where the old Red Cross headquarters used to be, which moved out years ago. It's where the blood bank was until last year. We've acquired the site. We're building. There's a shovel in the ground and a crane, actually a pile driver in the air right now as we speak. And also what took a long time, this is an $18 million project, was securing the funding while you're also securing funding to buy buses, which when I came to work at Centro, actually a couple of years before then, in 74, a bus cost $33,000. Well, you can't buy a good SUV for that today. Now a bus costs $420,000, and we have over 200 buses throughout the system, big buses plus the Colobus fleet. So while we're meeting the challenge of building a facility like our main garage and our regional transportation center, we have to continually replace and replenish our fleet. We also had to find $18 million to come up with enough money to perform the project. With a lot of help from Congress and some discretionary money that we were able to capture just less than a year ago, we've made it. We have the money. The proof is in the eating. The project is underway. I don't know how well you can see it. This is Salina Street. This is East Adams. This is Warren Street. And the back side, the south side of the Hotel Syracuse parking garage, is to the north. It's a little bit of an odd-shaped site, but we will be able to pull buses into this center island and two flanking islands simultaneously for 22 different bus routes so that customers can step off one bus undercover. This will all be covered with a structure inside for waiting and services and transfer from one bus to another without running across Fayette Street and maybe Salina Street too, without creating all of that pedestrian vehicular contract that you're all familiar with downtown. It's off street, it's contained, it's ours, and we'll manage it. And Steve, if you could show, this is the view of, you know, in transit terminology, you call it the head house. It's at the head end of the terminal, and it provides the waiting space, ticket and pass sale, vending opportunities, public restrooms, and it's climate controlled, heated in the winter, cooled in the summer, and it's attached to a large and very, very architecturally striking canopy which will run north from the back of that head house up to the wall of this Hotel Syracuse parking garage. And we've got a little treat for you, and it may take a minute or two to make this kick in, but we're going to give you a lifetime simulation of what we're talking about here. So let's take a ride. That's looking north. That's the head house. For these purposes, we took the roof off. It will look much nicer than that. But this, you're on wing flying in on the east side of the facility right now, with Warren Street at your right, and now you're turning and facing across the platforms toward Salina Street, toward Center State CEO. Now you've come 180 degrees. You're looking at the center island where the most heavily traveled buses will pull, so that you can make an across-platform transfer without even walking across the busway at the crosswalk. And you can walk right into the head house, the main facility. Far cry from what you see at Fayette and Salina Streets, I'm sure you would agree. We've done an awful lot of engineering and design work on this structure to make it come out right. So much so that in addition to just doing all sorts of engineering, mechanical studies, computer-generated models, and so forth, you know, it's fine out of a textbook or off a computer or a simulator, but we wanted to make sure that it really was going to work and every bus could turn and pass one another and not on opening day turn out to be a nightmare. So our good friends at Syracuse University allowed us to take over the flatland to the east of Skytop Office Building, and with some surveyors and engineers, an awful lot of cones, buses, a scissors lift that I know my marketing director here will never forget bobbing around on that and fearing for his life. We created this on a one-to-one scale, live time, and we operated it. We dispatched groups of buses individually or simultaneously. We made some tweaks, so it was worth our while, but it was a fascinating exercise, so that once again we can guarantee that it's going to work on day one. You're all familiar with the connective corridor. We're not going to be the rooster taking credit for the sunrise here. This really goes back, obviously, to Chancellor Cantor, Mayor Driscoll, and we are a third partner in this to provide not just transit service, but a pedestrian, a bicycle, a walking, or driving experience connecting the campus down to the Regent, I'm dating myself, Regent Theater, Syracuse Stage Area, Everson and other cultural and educational attractions, and all the way over to the warehouse and beyond. And that is coming along very well. It's more than just a bus route. We are testing right now, and this will have ramifications for the whole Centro system technology, where, like, I believe this is, Steve, is that the Shine Center?
The warehouse,
I'm sorry. You'll be able to walk to a bus stop and see live time, just like in the Washington Metro and the subway, where's that next bus? Is it coming in 2 minutes? Or is it 8 minutes up the road and I can run back into the cafeteria and grab a cup of coffee? We are doing the test phase now. We've worked out virtually all of the bugs now. So it's available now as an amenity, one of many, along the connective corridor route. And again, this will undoubtedly be the springboard for us to be able to do this as funds become available throughout the Centro system. And again, one of the gems in our collection is the Regional Transportation Center. I've pretty much explained how that came to be and what it does. We're extremely proud of it. This is a view taken from the Amtrak rail platform, looking down at the main facility, Greyhound and Trailways, parked to the rear. Centro local and regional buses come into the front. It truly accomplished its purpose and met a long-standing community need that went unanswered for some time. I think, Sandra, I think I hit it right on the mark. You said 8:50. We wanted to give everybody a chance for Q&A. So I believe Sandra will have a microphone portable that she'll send around, and let's talk.
Questions myself, but we'll start over here.
I have one thank you and one question. The thank you is to your former board member, Vince O'Neill, who was a member of TMR, for the getting the bike racks. And we really appreciate that. The question is, you are in a diversified business. Why haven't you taken over the school bus program?
Well, do I want to? We actually transport most of the high school students, public school students, and the three parochials in Syracuse right now, much as transit systems do all the way from small properties right up to the New York City transit system, where the students get a pass and they ride just like any other citizen. So we do that. We've done it for years. We think we do it well. Candidly, for smaller children, younger kids, they really need the comfort, the safety, the protection of that yellow school bus with the flashing lights, and that's something that is in our mission at the state and federal level kind of beyond our purview. We did a little bit of it for the Lynn Court School District earlier in our existence until people pretty much decided, no, you're the public transit hauler, leave that other stuff for the school districts, and there are even statutory limitations that preclude us from doing that. You mentioned Vince. Vince served on our board for years and years and years and was so multidimensional and so multifaceted and so interesting as a person. I miss the days when he used to call me up and just ask a question or want to have a cup of coffee or want to talk. And as we look back at the transfer hub here, we're going to do something that will memorialize Vince and his service to our community and to the Transit Authority. He was very concerned with and interested in art and public places. Don't just pour something out of concrete and peel the plywood forms off. So we have a small portion of our budget, but a significant part of the federal allocation is permissible for artwork. So inside the terminal, you're going to enjoy some real interesting artwork that's being done by a local ceramics expert here, Margie Udo, we're going to, that's for Vint. So I'm thank you for your comment and your question.
I'm old enough to remember when quite often when you're on the bus, you were standing because of the crowds that were there, and even downtown, you might not be able to get on a bus. You'd have to wait for the next one. Now, I'm assuming that the percentage of capacity has diminished considerably from the 40s until now, and I'm also assuming that suburban sprawl has a lot to do with that, but are there other factors that might impact on the capacity?
Well, the system capacity is less than what it was. In 1928, the Sunday schedule on Sunnycrest was better than it is on a weekday today, if that gives you any reference point. Everybody has a car. You said the S word, suburban sprawl.
Yeah.
It's killing us. It's been killing us for years. Our population in this county, in this regional area, as you just saw recently when the census came out, pretty stable. And fortunately, in the last 10 years, we've sort of stemmed the migration from the city out to the burbs, which was a pleasant surprise for everybody. But up to that point, it was stable, but it moved out. And it's out there, and there are big distances between residential and commercial and retail areas that didn't used to be the case in the 20s or even the late 1900s or even in the 50s. So that makes us have to run more miles with more expense to try to capture more people who have more cars and want to go to places that we just can't justify reaching. That's another one of our dilemmas. So you really nailed it. It has caused the system to shrink in terms of frequency of service, but fortunately because of, even though, for example, Onondaga Community College is up on Onondaga Hill and it's not downtown, it's still close enough. That South Avenue bus route taking those students to and from the college is one of the busiest and best routes in all of Central. The Carousel Development, Syracuse University, Connective Corridor, there's still a robust system. It's just not what it was 40 and 50 years ago. What doesn't hurt, much to the chagrin of everybody that came here in a car, is, you know, I drove past the mobile station. It's 375 this morning. That puts people on the bus. we like to think folks come more electively than by force through the gas pump, but candidly, we'll take care of ridership wherever we can accommodate it.
I'd like to ask a question that's related to that, actually. You said something that was interesting. You operate parking garages, the SUNY parking garages, and that would seem to put you in competition with yourself. But anyway, my question is related to that because the state DOT and the Metropolitan Transportation Council are just about to begin a big public input process with what they're calling the I-81 challenge. And along with that, they're also doing some traffic or travel demand modeling and trying to project or predict or crystal ball what traffic's going to be like in 30 years from now. What would you like them, what assumptions would you like them to make about bus ridership? Because you mentioned centers, and one of the hubs and the university and the whole hospital area, and that's one of the problem areas on 81, aside from the whole deterioration of the viaduct, the fact that there's always congestion there because there are 40 or 45,000 people trying to get on and off in Almond Street or Harrison and Adams, and we can assume that they're either going to work downtown or going to work on the hill. So what assumptions would you like them to make in their traffic demand modeling about central ridership, and I'm assuming you want it to go up, and what can you do to make it work that way, and how, you know.
You assume correctly.
Okay.
We have been heavily involved, myself, our chairman, H.J. Hubert, our planning director, we all serve on or chair various committees at SMTC, and being a key member agency, we've been involved in these discussions long before the public outreach plan, so we have a leg up, so to speak. That Almond, Adams, Harrison area drives me crazy, and from the day that I came here with my parents to interview for admission at Syracuse University and saw it going up, even as a 17-year-old kid, I'm like, you really want to do that? We have an opportunity that's once in a lifetime, and it's multi-generational, to get it right. I'm not sold, and this is just, it's not Centro's opinion, it'll talk about my personal opinion. I'm not sold that just rebuilding it and replacing it is where we want to go. You look at that thing, that behemoth of an intersection, as Sandra pointed out, every day in the morning and at night, it ties itself in a knot because everybody wants to go this way, but these people want to go this way. It needs to be built to accommodate better access to the hill and the university and the hospital complex, accommodating multi-modes. Better transit access, cleaner travel, bus stop nodes, termini, or whatever have to be a part of this so that we are an attractive alternative because, yeah, we've had now two spikes with gasoline prices. We're in the second one, but you know what? It's going to keep on happening, and it's probably going to get worse, and we are going to become more critical in saving the environment, in saving people's personal budgets and the economy at large. We have a place at that table. It's a solid place at that table. We have made and continue to make recommendations on our behalf. It's going to be a real challenge to solve that thing, but it better not look like what it does today, at least not from my perspective.
The Fayette Street and Solana Street Center has one huge advantage. Namely, once you get there, you don't have a minimum amount of walking to get to the bus. And that is very important to some people. Now, with the central transfer hub, it looks to me like there's a lot of walking involved in transferring buses.
Great question. I have a good answer. It's not just, this is going to be principally the transfer hub for individuals to get off one bus and safely and conveniently get on another bus. But the bus routes, as I've said on the Jim Reith show and all sorts of other venues, you have stops right now at Jefferson and Salina, Salina and Washington, Fayette and Warren. All those stops are going to remain, because people have to be able to get to appointments and opportunities, whether it's commercial, medical, professional, retail, or whatever, or employment opportunities in the Central Business District. All we're saying is if the bus doesn't stop at Fayette and Salina anymore, It's the farthest you're going to have to walk will either be to the stop up at Washington or the stop down at Jefferson. So it's at most a one-block walk. We're not going to disrupt any of those existing patterns. I'm glad you asked that question because I should have pointed that out. And if we weren't smart enough to know to do that, rest assured the federal government, who pays 80% of this, has all sorts of criteria that we have to meet, including not putting the bus rider in a worse or less advantageous position than he or she is in today. So the system remains intact. We're just getting all of that bus traffic, swap passenger stuff moved two or three blocks away.
I don't know whether this happened during your tenure at Central, but Warren Frank, who recently passed away, was deeply involved in the authority from the beginning. Could you tell us what his role was?
Well, when he was involved in the creation of the authority, I was studying at Syracuse University and reading about it in the Post Standard. But he was critical to the creation and development of the authority in Syracuse. Without going into detail, some of which I know and some of which is anecdotal to me, there were tremendous political forces at the city and county level that prevailed, plus getting the state to do its part. He spent countless hours, tirelessly, putting it all together. He's the father, and it's why we enjoy what we enjoy today. And it was my privilege to work for Warren and learn from him from 1977 until his retirement. And I was fortunate enough to be able to always stay in touch with him, whether it was when he would visit Syracuse and attend a board meeting as an alumnus, or just call up and we'd bounce an idea off of one another, because he had tremendous pride of authorship and ownership in that company. And it's a pride which I'm proud to say so many of our Central staff have and embrace today.
I noticed just glancing through the annual report that you're still trying to deal with that complicated problem of the bridge over Park Street to allow a potential future service pattern on Amtrak to be able to reach the Walsh Transportation Center. Do you see that as a possibility at some point in the future, some sort of service, transportation service, using that existing infrastructure?
I loved Amtrak. For those few people who know, I'm a train nut. Unfortunately, Amtrak had some structural and elemental features that did not breed success. It connected destinations, but not necessarily origins and destinations. The student population at Syracuse University was an origin, but it only touched the extreme west part of the campus way down the hill. Had it had more OD connections, it might have succeeded and still be with us today. It was a wonderful experience to be able to go to Carrier Dome football and basketball games on the train, and it relieved that hill area of a lot of congestion that, because of those steep roads, some of which are one way, are not suited for a bus. So it was tailor-made. It had its own economic shortcomings, and even with fully depreciated used equipment, the railroad, which is after all in business to make a profit and make a living, decided it could no longer sustain the losses. So the reason for my long answer to a short question is I'm not sure that it will come back, but the bridge, I believe, will be built. The funding is largely sitting there, as is the steelwork, because as we speak about improved rail service, whether it's high or higher or whatever better Amtrak service we hope we can attain for this community, one of the goals is to establish a second platform track through our station, which is already graded, the embankment's in place, and they could use the alignment where the bridge was to have gone for Amtrak to feed off the main rail line and bring a second Amtrak train off the main line and into the station. Right now, if something is off schedule, there's an Amtrak train waiting out on the main line blocking everything because there's another train in the station. So if nothing else, it will improve Amtrak operations. In my
personal wishes and dreams, I'd love to see OnTrack come back.
Well, building on that question, I'm assuming that we're going to knock 81 down in the center of the city, and that we're going to revitalize the center of the city. That's great to know. Can you envision light rail ever being a possibility as a feeder from the suburbs, this problem of density and bringing people into the center city as an alternative to parking and all the other?
I would love it. I really am a rail enthusiast. The question is, and this is the same with other mid-sized urban areas around the country, is there enough volume in the suburbs to justify all that capital expense of construction of right-of-way and purchase of multi-million dollar rail cars and their operation, whether it's by petroleum fuel or overhead electric, to draw enough people in to take them from someplace to someplace? I'm not sure if that's going to happen in Fayetteville or Camillus or even Liverpool, although interestingly enough, and getting back to Vince O'Neill's days, we took an all-day tour on rail lines in and out of Syracuse back in the late 70s to look at the possibility of, could you put in a rail system from Clay and Cicero and Liverpool into downtown? It was a financial and physical challenge back then. Could there be a fixed guideway, light rail, some type of service that could flourish in this community? If money wasn't an object, could you envision all the way up to Skytop, through the housing, Manly Fieldhouse, Syracuse University, University Place, the hospitals, the Dome, downtown, out along, maybe it's North Salina, maybe it's the Canalway to develop that, to the Carousel, to the Regional Transportation Center, maybe even on to the airport. You know, having started my life as a transportation planner, that's the kind of stuff I dream about. That would be probably the most single viable axis that could spur maybe further development. I'd love to be able to live long enough to see it. That's more how we need to be.
Since revenue is an issue, have you considered public-private partnerships?
In what regard? We do public-private partnerships now, for example, with institutions to subsidize some of our services. But as we were going through, for example, this most recent downsizing, we went to employment centers both in the city and, more importantly, out in the suburban areas where we provide expensive and costly bus service that runs up a lot of mileage to take people 6 miles outside of downtown to some former swamp in the eastern suburbs. And we asked if they would mind kicking in a little bit to support transit, just like they pay for paving their parking lot and plowing it and whatever. And it was no, no, and no. It's a noble goal, public-private partnerships, but engaging private dollars, especially in this economic climate, has been a challenge that so far we haven't been able to, we've had some success.
I think Eric had in mind, adopt a bus, or you mentioned advertisements in buses, things like that.
We try everything like that. Anything we can sell or partner with, we do.
What are the expectations for the Central buses being on time?
Always. That's the expectation. Actually, and we monitor our on-time performance constantly. The challenge we have, and it's much more challenging in a bus system than it is a rapid rail system, where in Washington Metro, the subway is the only thing using that track is the subway. It's tightly controlled. It runs on half-minute time intervals. We have to put up with traffic, weather, fires, accidents. And no 2 days are alike. And having you arrive where you're supposed to arrive exactly on that minute every day is a challenge that we continually struggle with, and our goal is 100%. It's part of the reason why we went to a system going back 15 or more years where, except in the busiest times, all the buses converge together at one point and make a single transfer of passengers, so there's more control over when they arrive and making sure that they get out of there on time so that they have a fighting chance of getting through traffic. But 100% is the goal. It's mighty tough to attain it. Commuter railroads rarely attain it, and they own their own right-of-way.
I have, Paul, just a quick one. Two-pronged question about appearance. And one is the appearance of buses. You referenced the white buses with the green and white stripes, yet there are several buses. I don't know if they're just the ones aligned with the connective corridor that are a little more snazzy, and I would think that would be to attract students to ride them. So, you know, is there any thought given to decorating buses to make them more appealing? And then also bus stops. They seem to all kind of look alike. Are there any variations? Can different neighborhoods have their own designed bus stops within certain parameters? And going along with that, the issue of litter, which is very big in this community, is there any attempt to always have litter receptacles near bus stops so before people get on the bus or when they get off, they have a...
You're going to have to help me remember all these questions, okay. Sandra. Maybe we'll take them in reverse order. In Onondaga County, there are 3,300 bus stops. We can't possibly put a litter basket at every bus stop sign. We try to at bus shelters. We have the shelters cleaned by a professional service on a regular schedule. We try to make the bus stops look homogenized because, candidly, you need a brand. You need an image. I'm not necessarily sold that every bus stop needs to be different, but in that regard, we have had talks, inquiries, and what have you about are there places where it could be unique. We had a conversation with some thought leaders on Tip Hill one time. They wanted a bus shelter that looked like a thatched hut from the old sod, but there's probably a fire problem there, with youngsters at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, or maybe even not so youngsters, I don't know, on St. Paddy's Day. In terms of the bus paint scheme, think back a while. They used to be dark blue and they were pretty dull. They're white now so that they're bright. They show up. Hey, we're clean, we're white, we're bright, and the blue and the green represent the environment. Trees, grass, water. They've been around a while, maybe to some folks the design is old, but candidly, changing all that paint costs a lot of money. The buses you spoke about earlier that are really kind of, they just hit the street recently, the three for the connective corridor, are really funky. They got balloons and bubbles and all sorts of cool things. That really is to set those buses apart and define the corridor as a brand. Hey, that's a corridor bus. And to, in that respect, attract people to say, yeah, that's something special, unto itself, unique, novel. Let's spend time on the corridor. What did I miss? Did I forget?
No, that's it. But thank you for the answers. One more question here.
What have you done in terms of city residents getting to employment opportunities in the county and different schedules and different routes? Has that been an issue for Centro?
It's not just an issue. And it goes back to the sprawl question where while you may have city residents in large numbers, you know, in neighborhoods, there are a multitude of different destinations that they would want to go to. And you can't have a bus get to each one of those destinations, which could be blocks or more likely miles apart, all at 7 or 7:30 or 8 o'clock in the morning. However, we've identified through our research, for example, on the South Salina Street corridor, there are a number of individuals, whether it's through programs or sponsorships or just being new to the workforce and not having access to a car, They take part in a lot of employment on the hotel and motel cluster out in the town of Salina, where they perform various service tasks, and it's good entry-level employment. So the bus from Nedro goes all the way up and hits all those hotels and motels. We try to find where the demand is greatest and where we, with limited resources, you know, if it costs $70 or $80 an hour just to pay to operate the bus, you got to have more than six people in there putting their fare in the fare box. We do, however, have some routes, whether it's out to Camillus for employment at all those retail centers like Walmart and Lowe's, or up on the Henry Clay Boulevard route. We actually sometimes have more riders going out in the morning than we do coming in. So we find and try to nurture those opportunities where we can. But again, once you get out past downtown and everything spreads out, it becomes a far greater challenge than when you used to be able to take people to Resnick on the north side, or Easy Washer, or Smith Corona, or whatever. It was all in the urban center, and you could do it in a robust fashion. Part of our challenge.
Many challenges. Thank you, Frank Kobliski.
Thank you, folks.